Welcome. It is time for another episode of the Balticon 47 Wrap-Up, brought to you by Balticon and Swimming Cat Studios. I'm Doc Coleman, your host. Today we're looking at a panel that has been long overdue on the convention circuit. Many panels focus on the art and the craft of writing. But at the end of the day, writers aren't just artists. They're also independent businessmen and women. This panel addresses some of the things you need to know to protect yourself and your business from litigation and exploitation. The name of this panel is The Business of Being an Author, and it is moderated by Colin Earle and features panelists A.L. Devereaux, Hildy Silverman, Allison Gamblin, and P.C. Herring. This panel was recorded on Sunday, May 26th at 10 a.m., and it isn't intended to be a soup-to-nuts discussion of the business of writing, but is instead offered as a primer to aid writers in educating themselves on the realities of running your own business. Topics addressed in the panel include LLCs and why you might want to form one, contracting pitfalls, the pluses and minuses of having an agent, and literary services that prey upon authors and how to recognize them. This was an excellent panel, and I hope it will spawn future discussion on the business side of writing. Enjoy!
Don't I never away said, I free that which you can charge for.
You never give them a percentage. Actually, don't you know that?
There are laws that say if I'm recording them and I'm making a profit off it, I have to pay them.
Yeah.
I can't.
Privacy laws.
I can't take volunteer work.
But we can still legally sign away that.
Yes, you can waive your rights.
Right. And you could turn around and pay us like a buck.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to have consideration for it.
And that'd be like a buck.
Yeah.
You could sign a contract saying that as your remuneration for the work, you'd accept a dollar or a coffee or something.
But you'd have to.
And I could go get the coffee.
He could say, I'm offering you a dollar.
Right.
But sorry, I would insist on a very expensive Dr. Pepper.
But I mean, I've got some voice actors for one of my audio productions that I'm offering to pay, and they say, oh, no, I'll do it for free. I'm like, okay, if you're going to do that, I'm going to pay you a buck. And they're like, okay, that's fine.
Well, mm-hmm. Here, let me help you out. I'll take the money.
Which time have we got?
You're
ready? I was going to say, so the only thing I'll say right now is that I am planning on taking this recording and eventually podcasting it on one of my websites, but it'll be available for free. So unless somebody has an objection to it.
Nope. Dude, not unless you backlink.
Huh. Yeah, backlink.
No, as long as I know what your sites are, I'll link to yours.
Yeah, that's it. Good.
Let's go ahead and get started. My name is Colin Earle, and I will be moderating this panel on the business of being an author. So the description of this is we're looking at the business side of being an author, whether it's self-published. And I think this actually attunes more to the self-published author. But I know that we have some traditionally published authors on the panel, so insights will be great. We are going to talk about all of the things that kind of go in there. We're going to talk about the legal side. We're going to talk about the actual business side, like how you think like a businessman. We're going to talk a little bit about the professional side. So I'm going to go ahead and have the panel introduce themselves, and we'll start here with A.L.
Hi, everyone. I'm A.L. Devereaux. You can call me Amanda. I am a YA blogger, reviewer, and author. I also have some adult steampunk short stories that are published. I've done small press, and I'm currently doing self-publishing, and I do New York as well, or at least I'm attempting to. I have an agent, and we have stuff on submission, so hopefully that will actually come to fruition in a short period of time. And that's it.
Good morning. My name's Hildy Silverman. I'm the publisher of Space and Time magazine, which publishes fantasy, horror, and science fiction. I'm also a short fiction author. My latest work is out in Mermaids 13 and Apocalypse 13 from Dark Quest, and I have had quite a few short stories published at this point.
Hi, my name is Allison Gamblin. I'm a WordPress consultant, and I also help self-published authors set up their sites, bring in visitors, try to get them on better marketing sites and get basically the electronic side of the author business going.
Thank you, dear. Hi, I'm PC Herring, self-published author. audio producer, and in my day job, I'm an accountant and a CPA candidate in the state of Illinois.
Let's go home. You just leave me here.
Oh, no, you're staying right there.
So, we're talking about the business of being an author, okay? When I say that, I just want you to give me the first thing that pops in around. Let's start on the other side. PC, when I say business of being an author, first impression.
Mulligan pass, don't start with me.
That is not a good business plan.
No, I mean, my head leans, first impression, my head leans to the finances.
But being a CPA, that's not surprising.
Well, yeah, and that's part, I mean, and to clarify, I'm not yet a CPA. I'm in the process of taking the exam.
Oh,
so I'm,
okay.
I'm a candidate at this point. I want to make sure that that's out there. Yeah, that's where my head usually leans to, is the finance side of things.
Mm-hmm. Allison?
I would say that the business starts with trying to brand yourself.
Okay.
Business for me is money flows to the author.
Yes.
Okay.
The first word that would come to mind when I think of it is growth.
And when I am a lawyer, and so I think of the legal aspect. Mm-hmm. Right, and that's probably why I'm moderating the panel. So we're starting a business, okay? And our business just happens to be author, right? I'm going to throw this out. Are all of you incorporated?
Yes, right? As of last day, early April, I am incorporated.
Okay, well, how are you incorporated?
I am incorporated as an Illinois-based limited liability company. It's broadly described as multimedia production. So I can write into that, I can podcast into that, I can produce audio for third parties into that, and spin all of that creative side through Off the Deep End Multimedia.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to go with?
Thank you, T. Morris.
Why did you decide to go with the limited liability company?
Structurally, from a tax side of things, it's easier to handle in terms of how many pieces of documentation you have to submit. If you do what they call a single member LLC, you gain the benefits of corporate protection on the legal side, but you gain the advantages of individual taxation on the tax side, which basically means that when you pay Uncle Sam, you only pay Uncle Sam once through a Schedule C on your 1040. I'm not going to turn this all technical, but whereas a corporation or an S corporation has its own full set of returns you have to do completely independently.
They have to be done quarterly.
And they are typically on quarterly, yeah. Exactly. An LLC tax as a sole proprietorship or a partnership just filters into your own 1040 via Schedule C.
So just to break that down a little bit, I'm going to take a more active role on this one. We're going to have you're going to have generally three types of legal entities that you can form, right? You have an S corporation, a C corporation, an LLC, and there are some other individuals you can do an LLP if it's a professional liability. Those are the three basic ones that you look at, right? When you're starting a business, you want to put in some type of legal protection in place, and that is generally in the form of an LLC. LLC is, in my business practice, that is what I recommend. You can't do any retained earnings, right? So all of the income that you create during the course of the year passes through to you as an individual. But as he was saying, the taxation side becomes much easier, and you get all the benefits of a limited liability company. Now, three documents come into play when you're creating a limited liability company, okay? This is very general. Disclaimer, I'm a lawyer in Colorado.
Most people say I'm not a lawyer.
Right. I'm a lawyer in Colorado, right? If you want to incorporate in Colorado, I can help you do that, and I do that for a lot of clients. This is going to vary from state to state, okay? So three general documentation that you need, articles and incorporation. That's the actual document that you uses to create the business in the state, okay? You need an organizational minutes. That is where the members of the LLC come together and actually put the business into creation. You need an operations agreement. An operation agreement is basically the lifeline of the corporation or limited liability company. It's what dictates the creation, the money, the management, all of those different things, because these are independent legal entities. Okay? On paper, they're as many rights, almost, as a human being. Mm-hmm. Okay, those are the three documents that you need. If you have other questions about those particular documentation, we can talk about those later. But I'm always going to say, as an author, you're treating it like a business, Okay. Whether it's audio production, whether it's creating websites or even when you're doing your own hybrid model and you're pitching stuff, or I'm sure that your magazine has a business, right? You need to incorporate in some sort of legal form for the protections that it provides. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the protection provided, and then I'm going to shut up. Okay? So the protections, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask one question, because I think it's good before you go into that. At what point do you need to start thinking about this?
I think immediately.
I already am. I just haven't gotten
so it.
Because the very first step that you take.
Because, and this is why I think on the finance side of things, and I can speak directly to you because you and I are working on a project together. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to contract you to provide a voice for my next audio production, I'm going to pay you. I'm going to be damn sure that it's not me you're contracting with, it's my corporation you're contracting with. So that is where that comes in, because I'm going to start actively trying to sell and make money off of the work that I'm asking you to do for me.
In a default position, before you incorporate, you have what's called a sole proprietorship,
yes.
Right? You are a business owner. However, the problem becomes is that personal assets, okay, and this is kind of the nasty part of business, personal assets become on the line unless you have the protection of some sort of company. Okay, so for example, let's say that Mr. PC over there and I get in a dispute, and I contracted him personally as an individual. I have to go to his state, and let's say I sue him, and I get a judgment against him. Okay,
he can take my condo.
I can take his condo. I can take his car. I can take all sorts of stuff from him. If you,
you can't
have
my viola,
right, you cannot get blood from a turnip. But no, I'm just kidding. Right? Well, if you have the protection of a company, that liability is limited. Caveat. Right? If you are ever sued, you will be sued in both an individual.
I was gonna say, I'll come at you personally.
And a corporate entity, because you are actually doing the work. But when you have employees or people who work for you or even do work for you on a contract basis, that's when the beauty of the protections come into place.
Yeah.
So the very first thing that I'm going to make a recommendation, and you can listen to the lawyer, or you don't have to listen to the lawyer if you don't want to, right, is you set up the company first. You're a professional in a professional space, and so you're going to act like a professional. That is what professionals do. Okay, go ahead.
So if you set up this company and you contract for a book, is the contract going to be with your
company?
Absolutely.
The contract will be with the company, but you will sign it as yourself as a representative of that company.
An agent of the company. Right. In the back.
How'd you have a company? LLC, sole proprietorship?
You stepped in a little bit late. I'm going to recommend, on a smaller scale, almost unilaterally across the board, LLCs. There are situations where maybe an S corporation might be a good one. C corporations are usually for publicly traded entities. You can have
expensive as all hell.
They're expensive of all hell, and they're just not needed.
But I would
that kind of comes back to what you were saying with the expenses. As a not quite starving artist, mm-hmm. How much are we talking about in terms of time and money for this?
Now, that is an excellent, excellent question. It's going to vary from state to state. When I do a business formation for someone, I charge $1,500, right? And that's across the board. I do your articles in your corporation. I do your operations agreement. I do the I'll even go as far as to set up a bank account for you, because you need those documentation mm-hmm. to be able to go to a bank to do that. I always recommend a national bank to do that, because our authors tend to move around a lot. And then I also will draw up a contract for you, especially if you're doing, for example, one of my clients is here, and she's a cover artist, and I drew up a contract for her that makes sure that if any time she does business with someone by her articles of incorporation and the terms of her agreement, you have to bring her to suit in Colorado. So if you were to bring a suit against her, and this is, like I said, this is the ugly part of publishing, guys, so we're going to get past it. Right. If you have to bring suit to someone, if you try to sue her in your state, I would come as her corporate representative, and I'd file a motion to dismiss based on the contract that's available that you signed. Right. And when working with her, this is the contract that is available. And then you'd have to come to my state and sue her there. And then I, as a licensed attorney in Colorado, could represent and protect her. Right? And I do that with all of my clients.
Allie, what were you going to say?
I was going to point out, in fact, now that she's here,
Paulette had this kind of done, but she did it through her CPA. And Maryland, in fact, probably a lot of states, you can probably do a lot of this through CPA because so much of it is so standard for, you know, certain small level entities. Mm-hmm. And in that way, you can save a lot of money because, I mean,
it is. I'm expensive. Lawyers are expensive. Yeah, lawyers are expensive.
Yeah.
And going back to the cost question. In Illinois, and again, every state's got differing criteria. I was actually working with a colleague in Florida. We were looking at it for a while, and it's cheaper there. Initial incorporation fees for the state are $500 to do an LLC, and then $250 a year after that to maintain, on top of whatever professional fees are.
And depending, it's going to be different depending on the state, especially.
I think I looked at Florida, and they were like $130 to organize and like $100 to maintain. I mean, again, depends on the state.
In Colorado, it's $50. $50 to organize.
Oh, I need to move to Colorado and reset up.
Right. If you're having some complex corporate entities, a lot of those places get incorporated in Delaware because their district courts, I'll get to you in just a moment, their district courts out there are specifically used for corporate dispute type of law. So when you have shareholders suing another shareholder, that's very complex corporate law based on articles of incorporation and statutes, and it's a big fat pain in the ass. And so they have judges out there that are specifically kind of trained in that type area of law. So if you look at Ford, you look at some of these Fortune 500s, almost all of their incorporations are going to be in Delaware.
Right.
What's that?
Thank you, DuPont.
Yeah, right. So it's generally, if you want to do it in the state that you're in, you can talk to a CPA. You can even look at LegalZoom. If you have any sort of contract issues or business issues, I would recommend that you speak to an attorney because a contract alone, you can usually get these things bundled. Mm-hmm. A contract alone, you're going to get billed on an hourly rate. So, and I charge $260 an hour.
I would also point, as far as contracts go, everything we're discussing, you're always going to hear the word contract because if you're a real professional, that's what you're going to use. But the other thing is if you can't afford an attorney or a CPA, find somebody who's already in the business. In a lot of cases, like I do, I talk to my colleagues. I say, I need a contract for this. Do you have one that you could recommend? Mm-hmm. I take it, I change it, and I use it.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, you can save yourself money, you can save yourself time, because this has already been tested, you know, mm-hmm. and refined through people who are in a similar situation.
Okay. I think we had one more question back here.
Oh, I was just going to add, I looked at Tennessee recently for some other reasons. I think it was about $400.
Yeah, so it widely, widely varies. We're going to go ahead and move on from there. If we have any other questions at the end, we can come back to the subject. So we have our business set up, right? And I'd like to talk a little bit about the financing portion of it, and you have some expertise on that. Well, let's talk about. Well, let's not do that. Let's go on to. So we have our business is set up. What's the next step? And I'm just going to throw that out there. And these are some of the more familiar things you guys are going to be talking about. You got to come up with a product,
I would say,
right?
I think that brings it into branding.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to decide whether you're branding what you're trying to sell or you're branding yourself. And in most cases, for an author, it's silly to brand the thing you're trying to sell because you're going to have more than one, what we call property. And so if you're branding solely for the property that you're trying to move, then when you create another property, you've put all your time and effort into this one thing instead of putting it into you. So I think at that point, you need to decide your brand because that's going to guide you so much in your marketing, in your online presence, and the way you represent yourself and everywhere that you go. And so if you don't have your branding set up, what you're going to do is you're going to put all this time and effort in, and you're going to end up burning it when you create another property. So if you don't brand like right after you create your business, then I think you're just wasting your time.
I would almost say you need to brand before you create your business.
I said that
it needs to be part of your comprehensive.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm just saying
it needs to be part of your comprehensive plan.
Absolutely.
A business plan. I guess we can take a step back on that. A business plan should start with what your goal is in mind. Right. The legal side of it is once you have a goal in mind, it's pretty easy, mm-hmm. really. Right, but you need to have a goal in mind. What is it that you're going to? What is it that you're going to sell? So, you've done several different items, correct?
Yeah.
Can you explain? Say what is it all that you do again?
Tell us something. I write general fiction because I have a number of different genres that I represent, and a lot of times, you when you're first starting out, you think you want to brand towards the specific genre that you're writing. So a lot of, I'm associated a lot with steampunk because my first pieces were steampunk. So people recognize me most by my pictures, which I'm kind of stuck in that. You know, people recognize me by my hat and my look over the shoulder because that's like the picture that is across the, you know, the internet. And people recognize me from the music video with the hat on. So it's like, that's what I am stuck as now because I didn't know this when I first started. And it's kind of, okay, my brand is I have to have this hat all the time. Because and it's like I see people that I have met in my steampunk persona and they don't recognize me with my glasses and with my hair down and in normal people clothes. And I literally have to take my glasses off and turn sideways so they recognize me.
You can rebrand, but it takes monumentally more effort because of the preconceived notion of the people who are.
Yeah, and so like over the past few years, I've kind of been trying to step down from that and kind of trying to push the steampunk away because that's technically not the genre that I really want to be in. I'm a YA author, so I kind of want to be more like, this is me, kids, and, you know, this is, you know, me being cool and the same thing that you guys are. Not that they're not into it, because there are a lot of kids that are in steampunk, but branding-wise, you just want to, before you really step out there and let people know who you are, you want to figure out what kind of clothes you're going to wear on a normal basis. You can costume, but don't expect that to be what makes you who you are unless you want a costume for the rest of your life.
Or unless you're Gail Carriger.
Yeah,
or you're in the business of costuming.
Yes.
She wants a costume for the rest of her life.
You know, so you want to think about the clothes. You want to think about, you know, are you going to wear a certain hair color? Because I have a friend, Leah Habel, who literally she wears wigs, and she changes her hair color every single day. But her publisher says you have to wear your brown wig because that is who you are to these readers. And so every time she goes to an event, she has to have brown hair because otherwise they won't recognize her.
Well, that's the thing is when I met Merle Lafferty, she had bright purple hair. And so when I think of Merle Lafferty, I think of bright purple hair. And, of course, she shows up with, you know, no hair.
I have the same problem. I walk right past her, didn't even recognize her.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, those little changes will change your author brand, especially if you're a highly visible person, especially on the internet, because people will recognize you by your picture, you know. And then you need to think about how we were talking about professionalism the other day, how you want to represent yourself to the world outside. Are you going to be someone who is highly political and highly religious and make these comments? Or are you going to be somebody who stands in the gray area and have a middle ground sort of approach to things? You know, and almost, you have to almost sculpt a personality that is your author self. I mean, not everyone will do that. Some people are like, this is me and this is how I'm going to stay. But depending on, you know, how you are in normal life and how you want to portray yourself, you need to kind of be a little bit careful about how you want to brand yourself in that respect.
I would just point out, it's something that I only really learned about 2 years ago as far as it goes, and it's something you wouldn't think about, is a lot of professionals, they have two different signatures. They have one they use for their personal writing your checks, and you have one they use for your autographs and all the other stuff, and the reason is because it protects them from fraud.
Yeah, or a pseudonym.
Yeah, or a pseudonym. And it wasn't something I'd really thought about, but it's something to definitely keep in mind and maybe even practice.
I've created a fictional entity for my author identity, and that's who's on Facebook and the rest of it. Yep. So you don't want people to know who the hell I am. But on the being careful who you brand yourself as, the author of that dreadful book, Vampire Lestat, publicly was, yes, statements about witchcraft and Satan and things, then publicly joined the Catholic Church, then publicly recanted, and publicly, and just like, what the frack, write a book? I'm only interested in
She did tremendous damage to her brand, actually.
Yes,
and now that she has decided to go back to the one that brung her, which is vampires and werewolves and such, the success, it may come back, but you can see the damage was done.
So if you're having a fictional identity as your author identity as opposed to who you really are, that allows you to... I mean, not everybody's David Gerald. You don't have to be everything you are out in the real world. This is the fictional person who writes my fiction. And what I do professionally, not the same person.
And we talked a little bit about that yesterday as well, because a lot of us have day jobs. And in the day job, I mean, I'm at a very fairly conservative company. I work for Siemens Hearing Instruments. I'll wait till that stops ringing. How about that? There's a thought. God?
This is
God.
Are you calling now of all time?
You got to rapture us in the middle of a panel. Come on.
Something about to...
Well, now we know when we all received the call.
Yes. Writing is Brand will be sitting at the phone.
But as I was saying, I work for a company where I'm a digital marketing communication specialist. It's fairly conservative. The people I work for are fairly conservative. I may not lead with the fact that I write, you know, gory horror at times. You know, I try to keep those worlds separate. I'm very selective about who I friend on Facebook as myself versus for the magazine. Since I have the situation where I have the magazine, I have a magazine Facebook page. So it's just Space and Time. And I post as Space and Time, so there's a certain anonymity there.
I would say as an online professional, I use the same name for both, but I still have two personas. Mm-hmm. And so usually you can... It's too hard for me to maintain more than one thing because I'm a lot more plain-spoken than a lot of people, you know, would think of as a professional, but I don't care. And so when I have those two professionals, I have the personal one and I have the business side, and so I have more of a community aspect for my professional than I do for my personal one. And you can do that very easily on places like Google Plus and Facebook.
And you're going to realize in this panel is that we're crossing over on a lot of topics that we've kind of hit during the course of this week, and I feel like this panel particularly, as the business of being an author, it is a culmination of this professionalism idea. I integrate my writing life and my professional life. Why? Because I don't think I can keep them. I don't think I can super separate. And I'm not, you know, I can't divide it. And so I specifically write in a genre where it should not affect my professional life, right? But I also have a different persona. When I'm in a court in front of a judge, it's very different than I am a panel. I'm not wearing a hat, for instance.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not updating Twitter. Judges don't like that. I'm sorry, Your Honor. One moment. I need to put this on Twitter.
Right? Well, and that's the other thing right there. I mean, the PC Herring's the name I publish under. If you Google my legal name, you're not going to find me. You're going to find lawyers. You're going to find local congressmen. You're going to find a bunch of other people. And that is...
And they're all suing PC Herring.
Yeah.
Trademark.
But if you Google PC Herring, I'm probably on the first 2.5 pages of Google in various ways, shape, or form. And that's because, you know, and I know a lot of states are moving to make this now illegal. At the time when I was forming my brand... businesses were Googling and using your social media aspects to decide whether or not they wanted you employed with them or whether they wanted you to remain employed with them.
Oh, they still do.
It's major.
I'm very fortunate where I work. My supervisor knows I write. She's perfectly willing to let me set up my laptop at my desk during my lunch hour and hit out words. She doesn't care what I do on Facebook or Twitter or any of that spot. But I'm not going to be there for the rest of my life. I'm not going to be working for her for the rest of my life. And so there's a little bit of protection there for me, just personally, because PC Herring is a snarky SOB sometimes.
Yes!
See, I've actually had the book put me out amongst other attorneys, and they looked at my resume. I'm full disclosure, right? Mm-hmm. I write YA and modern fantasy and science fiction. I've actually put that on my resume and had employers be like, and then Google me, and then have my books there when I go into interview. So for me, it's part of...
You might make a sale.
Right. My entire office has read my books.
You can't have a job,
but
I'll take 10 copies.
But if I was writing, and I don't write erotica, but if I was writing an erotica type thing, I probably would divide that persona.
Yeah.
That's part of me as a professional. This is part of my identity as an attorney, and my identity as a young adult writer.
Paul had a hand up, and I cut her off.
Basically, I just want to say, if you decide that you're going to present an alternate persona, especially if you're going to have a pseudonym,
mm-hmm.
you need to be prepared. It's not going to all just be business.
No.
One thing that I didn't realize when I created my pseudonym and my persona is that I would then also have a social life as that person, to the point where I'm not sure everybody knows I have another name.
I just found that out. I didn't know you had another name.
Well, it's on my website. But yeah, I mean, it came as a surprise to me that along the way, as you create this persona, it takes on a life of its own, and you will acquire a social side to it. So you need
Let me ask. I mean, since we already talked about incorporation, you incorporated under your pseudonym, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. Paulette Jackson LLC.
So you can do that as well.
So,
you don't
so I can actually like have a credit card that says Paulette Jackson.
And it actually you can actually create a that persona as well, and you can actually trademark that.
Yeah, she's got like a double level protection.
To be honest, the primary reason I did that was so that I could make contributions as Paulette Jackson. Because you know people would run certain things, and I'd want to contribute to their Kickstarter or whatever. And because my credit cards are all under my real name, I couldn't contribute as Paulette Jackson. But with the LLC, it has its own bank account. That's fun going through getting a business bank account.
God.
You'd be amazed how ripped off people. Just personal
walk into U.S. Bank with your forms and just tell them you want a basic free checking. I mean, I did that a week ago.
Yeah.
For off the deep end, and
it's,
I was and
weird.
I was
when
done
you
in about
in
an hour.
Say you want to start a business account, it is completely different than walking in and saying you want a personal checking account.
But
they will step all over themselves.
Yeah, but at the same time, if they're trying to push product, and this kind of gets more back towards the business side of things, if I may, you know, they do tend to push things sometimes, and they'll say, "Oh, well, do you want a business credit card? Do you want a business debit card? Do you want this? Do you want to do that?" I'm like, "I want a basic checking account that can do online bill pay, interface with PayPal, a debit card, and an ATM card, and I don't want to pay for it."
Let me say it this way. I've had the best success with Schwab. It's a national bank. Mm-hmm. It's online. They really work well with you, and that meets all those criteria. Yeah.
And, I mean, and my banker at U.S. Bank, when I was over there the other day, he said, "Okay, this is what we got. Here's where your limits are. Will that work for me?" Fine.
If you're an author, I would say just avoid any sort of regional...
Yeah.
A regional bank, an online, as long as you can get to it nationally,
mm-hmm.
that's what you need.
Actually, you even want to look into making sure that you can do it internationally.
Yeah.
Well, I don't go out of the country often, so I can't really testify to that.
Would you really like to sell your books outside the country?
That's probably as a self-published offer, I don't know if I'll ever get to that day, but that's a really, really good point, you know. I look at whenever I set up an LLC, I've used Wells Fargo in the past, and I'm not a huge fan of Wells Fargo. I've actually sued them half a dozen times.
You're in the rest of the country.
Right? But they're a national bank, and for the most part, people at individual branches are pretty easy to work with.
Can we change the panel? Because I want to hear about you suing national banks.
Yes.
Is this for a client or for yourself?
Please say it's for yourself. That's so much juicier.
Let's just say that I could tell you who we're suing it for right now, but he might be mad because he's here.
Don't you have a confidentiality issue?
Yeah. We are recording.
So, right, don't believe
this panel may be recorded for quality insurance purposes.
There's Gail.
I was going to say, the client can out themselves.
Right, that's right. If he wants to talk about it, you can talk to him. So...
I'd also like to throw in there as an option, if you have it, a credit union. Working with credit unions are really good. They do not fee you to death. And I found them, fortunately, my husband used to work for AT&T, so we're in a very good credit union, and that's been really helpful.
Another general practice, and this goes back to the business side of it, is as you start expending money, for example, I'm here, and my books are paying for this, and I'm writing all of this off.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So a general practice, when you go and you have your LLC form, and the reason why you want to do the business incorporation, it becomes to make all of these expenses
tax deductible
and easier to keep track of.
Yeah.
Except for food. You can't.
Well, half of it.
Yeah.
Half of it. Technically.
But let your tax CPA attorney go through
yes,
that.
Yes.
Handle
your
that.
CPA, you take your receipts.
Yeah, you hand him your receipts or your income statement balance sheet if you're going to go into a more formal accounting approach like I do, and you say, "These were my transactions," and...
Figure it out.
Right. I mean, yes, I'm an accountant. I don't do taxes.
That's a whole different animal.
I'm more in the corporate, I'm more in the bookkeeping and managerial, exactly. But, you know, your flights, your hotels, mm-hmm. your rental car if you've got one, gas, incidentals.
I went to Mount Vernon yesterday, and I'm writing it off as a research expense. Will they let me? Maybe. I can always ask.
Yeah.
If you drive everywhere, you need to keep a mileage record, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And mileage is technically reimbursable.
Yes.
I don't know what the current rate is. I think it's 40. It is 48.
Yeah.
Well,
it also depends on the purpose.
Have you guys touched on the whole Schedule C issue?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
We talked. Yeah.
Because, you know, I found when I went to Hi, I'm Gelsey Martin. I write the Chronicles of the Necromancer series for Solaris Books and the Ascended Kingdom Saga and Fallen King Cycle for Orbit Books, and I was just double booked at a book launch for Dark Dragon and Handel's Mini Books, so I apologize. Tried to split the time. But what I found with Schedule C is when you go to do something like refinance your mortgage or buy a car or something like that, if you're self-employed, and this goes whether you're a writer or not, your income goes on that Schedule C. Sometimes you get a not very sophisticated mortgage broker, car salesman, whatever, and they are only used to working with people who draw a salary. And so they look at the first page of your tax return and go, but you didn't make any money last year. You're going, no, dipshit, it's on Schedule C. See this page three in?
Well,
that's where my income is. Oh.
My brother's suffering from that, right? My elder brother's an attorney as well in Idaho, and he had a very good year last year, revenue stream rise, but his accountant did some magic, and he made $27,000. That's not a good year. He's like, honey, how am I supposed to buy a house with that?
We call it prepaid and deferred.
I think Dick's Sporting Goods sells tents.
16 foot. We're gonna. How much time do we have?
You're about 9:30.
9:30
or 10:30.
We'll go ahead at
bottom of the hour.
It feels like
this is
so. We've got about.
I'm something in the time zone. I'm some Chicago's time.
So we've touched on the finance side. We've touched on the legal side. We've touched on the branding and the professionalism side. And so what I would say is this: let's kind of take that together. You need to have a comprehensive business plan, okay? So I'm going to be quiet and let the panel, let's start here. Okay. What do I mean by a comprehensive business plan?
Well, you need to know where you're going with this venture. So take a look 1 year out, 3 years out, where do you expect your business to be? It doesn't mean you're going to necessarily be there, but you need to set a destination for yourself so that you can build towards something. And that means that this destination you've set for yourself, that's what's going to be the direction, the compass for your marketing. That's what's going to guide your branding decisions. When you have a choice, do I do this with my time or that with my time? Do I do a standalone novel? Do I contribute to an anthology? Which anthology opportunity do I pursue? You come back to that business plan and go, where do I want to be 1 year, 3 years, 5 years from here? And all of a sudden, those decisions that had all looked pretty much, you know, one's as good as the other, you start to see this choice will get me closer to where I want to go. This one's going to take me off in a totally different direction. Yes, it might be a nice thing to do, but it's going to take my energy a different direction. And that business plan will help you keep focused. It'll help guide your expenses, your choices, your investments. So, and by investments, I mean, do I buy a new computer? Do I buy a new cell phone? Do I buy a new printer? What do I put back into the business? Because if you're self-employed, it's not just raking the profit up the top. It's what do I put back into the infrastructure that allows me to do what I do?
How do I? Business plan is the
guide for that.
That is fantastic. Let's get some other opinions. Go ahead.
Follow that up. Hey, I think you're talking
awesome
after you, Neil. I do. You're so well spoken. Yes, everything she said, and along with that, you want to think about how, like I was talking about before, growth. Mm-hmm. You want to think about how you're going to start marketing yourself out there. Like, you have all these plans, these grand plans about what you're going to do, and you have all this security netting in place, and you have your brand all set up. Now you want to think about how you're going to take the next steps and reach out to the rest of the people mm-hmm. in the world. You know, are you going to go out and physically do it? Are you going to do it through the internet? You're going to do a combination of things? Are you going to have your publisher do it all? You know, like, you need to sit and think about that kind of thing.
What both of them said. I mean, I approach a lot of it from the marketing perspective because that's my, again, the day job. The comprehensive plan. I don't believe in leaving anything out. You've got to be on there digitally. You have to be available through social media. You have to be there through plain old paper. I mean, any way to reach your readership. And, of course, you have to know your readership or who you want your readership to be or anticipate they will be and how they are going to take in your product and tailor your approach that way so that you reach everyone who could possibly be a reader or send money to you for other reasons.
I would obviously agree with them because they've covered a lot of the good stuff. As far as the online approach goes, once you've decided on your brand, you need to secure your properties. If you go on there and you only get something on Facebook under your chosen name or your chosen brand, but you leave everything else open, you're going to find that a lot of people will actually sit on it and try to force you to buy it from them. And the same thing with the URL. If you come up with a URL you like, you don't run a search for it unless you're going to buy it. Because a lot of people will watch the top URL searches and then they'll just start sitting on them. Squatting. They'll buy them. They'll squat. We call them squatters. Yeah. And they'll take it and then you'll start getting these rude emails about, well, I have it. Now you have to pay me if you want it.
Right.
So don't proactively go out and do a search for it unless you've already decided this is the one I want. If you are interested in doing that, there are a lot of good reputable URL providers that you can go through and find out. And sometimes you can do a workaround if somebody's already taken it, like instead of doing a .com, do a .net or something like that.
.co is a new one.
.co is a new one.
Though some of those more exotic extensions are now going up in price for domain registration. Mm-hmm. So
as people get desperate.
The .com, .org, and .nets, I think, went up like a buck or two. And some of the, and some of the, like the Co's, the TVs, Biz are going up to like 15 or 20 a year now.
The other difficulty with that is most people think in terms of .com.
Yeah.
So, you know, honestly, my suggestion is find a way to make your URL, or at least one of your URLs, a .com, because that's what people think as. So if you're lucky enough to have an unusual name, your name is probably still out there as a .com. Maybe you have to use a middle initial. But, you know, honestly, I have changed titles to things to get the .com if the first title I thought of somebody else had.
Yeah, and kind of to echo what Allison was saying, I actually got really lucky because my next project, I haven't yet done the domain search for, had not yet done the domain search for, and I was sitting around some friends at my Thursday night game, and one of my friends saying, hey, are you still working on that Slipspace project? I'm like, yeah. He says, you want the domain? I'm like, what do you mean? He says, yeah, I registered slipspace.net like years ago just for the hell of it. Do you need it? And I'm like, yes. And, nice. And he was nice enough to say, fine, bring me a six-pack of beer. I'm like, done. Wow. So he said, six-pack of beer and the transfer fees, and that was it. So
that's the thing.
See, you should have gotten the .com and said, no, you use the .net for the fan site.
Well, I am going to go out and get the .com, believe me.
And sometimes, and I just want to jump this out there, sometimes you'll think, well, it's not possible that somebody hasn't already snapped it up. And you're wrong. My husband and I recently got married, and being a social media author, I was trying to think of cool ways that I could post about everything I had done because we did a Firefly wedding. And I said, well, I wonder if gettingmarriedgeek.com has been taken. And you would think, obviously, no, I got it last week. Wow. Somebody had not taken it yet. So if you have an idea with a URL, if it's one that you want and you're actually prepared at that moment to buy, do a search for it, because you'd be surprised how many good ideas that people have assumed while somebody else already has it, and so they don't. You might be the one who gets it.
You know,
but don't search for it until you're ready grab it, because people can search what other people are searching for. If you search for a domain multiple times, someone else will
support it. But at the same time, and going back to your question about the comprehensive business plan, the nice thing about the business plan in whatever form it takes, I mean, whether you got a 50-page write-up or a couple of notes on an index card somewhere. I mean, that's one of the takeaways I wanted you guys to have with this, is that we're throwing out a lot of terms here. You know, a lot of legal, a lot of accounting, a lot of finance, a lot of marketing. This isn't as complicated as it sounds once you sit down and break this out.
That's right, it's worse.
No, I would say, on that subject, I would say set modest goals.
Yes.
Right? Goal setting is a very, very important part to a business line. You have your 1, your 3, your 5, your even 10-year plan, but what are you doing for the next week? Right? And
sleeping.
I think that comes into the business, I think that comes into the business of monetizing what you're doing, whether it's internet marketing, whether it's writing, right? A lot of us, a lot of independent authors likes to go with the loss leader model, right? So I have a series called The House of Grey, which was serialized in 6 volumes, okay? The first 2 volumes are free, right? That's a very simple, very straightforward to monetize a loss leader, monetize the project, right? And I don't think we've talked much about monetizing our work, and whether that's internet marketing, or a lot of us are on here are authors, and there's resources, and I almost feel like that's another panel completely.
Oh, man, it could be.
You know, so
I mean, one of the things that you need to be aware of, and I'm not going to get too technical. If you are selling direct, if I've got my book right here, and I'm an independent author, and you want a copy of it, technically, I need to be withholding sales tax on that sale and then remitting it to the state in which I do business, which means that because I'm sitting here in Baltimore and I made this sale to somebody in this room, I now owe that sales tax to Maryland. Mm-hmm. Then when I go back to Illinois, I owe that sales tax in Illinois, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or you can not, I mean, you know, I'm probably going to get booed right here, but you don't have to direct sell. I mean, you don't have to have your books in your hand to hand it to. You can put your product on Amazon's Kindle KDP, or on CreateSpace if you're going into print, and let Amazon handle that side of the sales tax and just take the royalties off as your earnings. Mm-hmm. And some states are starting to get inchy on sales tax for online sales. I know Illinois is looking at it right now.
Colorado already tried to do
that.
Now, didn't Colorado succeed?
Yes. Colorado succeeded. However, a lot of the affiliates that have gone in, there's been a huge backlash.
Oh, I'm sure there has. Yeah. But let me ask you this. In Colorado, if I go out and buy a book on Amazon, Amazon's going to charge me sales tax. Does Amazon remit that back to the state, or do they put that back to the original content creator?
I believe the state. Yeah, it goes to the actual state.
But let me rephrase. Amazon remits it to the state, or Amazon sends it to the content creator to send to the state?
Amazon remits it to the state.
Okay, so already, right there, you don't have to worry about any of that sales tax crap, because if you're going through a third party that's going to administer that for you.
Plus, they send you all the paperwork come tax time, so it's... I mean, my husband's an author, Brand Gamblin, and we get royalty paperwork from them every year before tax season, and so it's something we don't have to worry about, because it's already taken care of.
All I have to do is report it.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and open it to questions. Holy crap. Start right here.
Okay. I'm probably a minority case here, but I am Canadian.
Hey.
So should I... should I just incorporate in Canada, or can I?
Well, that's so far out of my jurisdiction.
I would say that if you want to, depending
the most
on
dealing, I'm going to do is in the States, right?
Right. I would say it. That's a tough question.
That is
because I think it depends on the situation. Like there are situationally where I've taken clients and say, I want you to go to LegalZoom, and I want you to do this paperwork yourself. But I've also taken clients who don't want to handle this stuff. I'm like, I'm taking your LLC over. I'm ministering. I'm acting as a general counsel for you. So I'm going to do everything. So I think it's really situation specific. Generally, what I will say is you probably want to incorporate in the state that you are living.
Yeah.
Now, if you're around a lot, that might.
I would also argue that you should probably incorporate in the legal jurisdiction that you want to go to court in, if it comes to that. I mean, and we always talk about that, and everybody gets paranoid about being sued, but it's a lot easier to get into the Illinois courts, if that's where you want to be, if you are incorporated in Illinois. If your contract disputes will be adjudicated in
the
state of Illinois.
I think the other thing to keep in mind is
adjudicated.
Where you sell has so little to do with where you physically stand at the moment. I mean, I'm from the States, but I sell a lot in Canada. I sell a lot in England. So you've got to also, you know, think about, you know, maybe where's your passport from, and that's where your home is legally, because your sales are going to be everywhere.
And being, you know, incorporated in Canada doesn't mean you can't sell your Dragon Moon Press, which is my publisher, is incorporated in Canada.
So is Greg.
But 90% of their sales are in the U.S.
Yeah. As a general rule, unless there's some reason, you're going to incorporate in the area where you live. Just as a general, there are situations where it doesn't make sense. If you want to have someone like an attorney handle it for you, the attorney's probably going to say, incorporate where I can protect you. Right? I've done that many, many times. Let's go to Veronica.
Okay. So my situation is a little weird because I'm a voice talent first and an author second, but I get revenue from both. I use my own name because I didn't know any better, and it's unique, so bonus. Why I'm going to text this to the person who's handling my accounts right now. Why is it worth creating completely separate physical accounts versus just tagging everything individually?
We're going to go ahead and hand that kind of question over here.
I don't think he's excited enough.
One word. Audit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, as a small, privately held LLC or S corporation, you will probably never need to be audited. I'm going to come back. I'm going to caveat this. And by audit, I mean IRS audit. You may get randomly selected, but you may not. You're probably not going to get flagged unless
this.
Can't
you just claim the fifth now? Isn't that the thing?
No. I'm really not.
The IRS can claim the fifth, but nobody else.
Now, that said, even privately held companies, large companies, still oftentimes hire auditors to come in and just review your books on an annual basis. My company does it every year. We're family owned. More importantly, is if you're looking for external financing, if you're looking for a line of credit, if you're looking for a loan, if you're looking for anything, you guys say, well, I'm an author, I'm a voice artist, why on earth would I need a loan? Do you want to renovate your studio? You might need some money for that. You might not have the cash on hand within your personal finances that you can move over or in the books of your company. But that way it's an organizational issue. It also executes, and it should have become a legal issue.
And it is a legal issue.
And it should, and I'm getting there, is also should become a legal issue, and you say lose a determination in court, then it's a lot easier to say, okay, you're incorporated. Where do your personal assets end and your business assets begin?
Ever heard of the concept of piercing the corporate veil?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why you keep everything separate.
You have to keep everything separate. I mean, the day Off the Deep End converted from a sole proprietorship to a formal LLC, I was at the bank and I spun off my other PayPal account. I've got five accounts now that fill into me between my two entities of me and my company.
I'm super lucky because I have a Chris, right? and Chris handles all the books. And so when I developed the LLC, so our imprint is under Silverstone Productions, mm-hmm. right? We have an operation account, and Chris literally balances the books. All of the expenditures from this trip has dated who's there and what it was purchased for, and it goes into a box for when Chris does the taxes at the mm-hmm. end of the year, right? If I got into a legal situation where Silverstone was sued, mm-hmm. if I had mingled my personal and my business assets, that pierces it's piercing the corporate veil, meaning that they can get through that limited liability company and go after my personal assets. Now, I don't have anything, so that doesn't mean anything, but when at some point, hopefully you do. So,
Not mean, however, that you can't put more money into your company or take money out of your company.
You just gotta follow the rules.
That also does not mean that you can put, that does not also mean that you can't put, say, on your, if you've got your personal credit card here tonight, like what I'm doing, and you use that to spend on your hotel, but you want that as a business asset because you don't have a business credit card, you can still do that, but you've got to make a note in your accounting, whatever it is, whether it's QuickBooks or an Excel spreadsheet or a box of receipts, you've got to make a note that this receipt is a transferred, refundable or reimbursable, essentially it's your expense report.
Per diem,
what have you.
We don't operate.
Isn't there also a concern that if you're embroiled in legal action that someone might try to freeze your assets?
Absolutely.
And if you've got your business and your personal commingled,
then your personal
you're
frozen.
Shut off from all of your money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've done it. I've frozen assets. I've attacked bank accounts and collection matters.
It's a very real part
of doing business.
So if your funds are commingled and you're in a lawsuit and your assets are frozen, you can't make your car payments, you can't make your house payments, you can't do anything. You're locked out. And then you're stuck. Whereas with that corporate veil, the only thing that they can hit are the corporate accounts until
there's a special judgment against you.
Right.
We've got I think we're done here. Yep. So thank you for coming. I am planning to stick around if you want.
Yeah, I'll be around.
Ask me any more questions, and if the panelists
there's,
want to stick
there's
around.
There's one more question I'd like to ask before everyone runs away, and I hope the answer will be quick. How much money should someone expect to budget for stand-up and annual expenses for running your own business?
Depends.
Yeah, it depends on state.
It depends
state.
On state. I'd say at least $1,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now that should give you in most
is that
states that should.
Or is that stand up and every year?
And that is
set up.
The setup is going to be more, right? The setup's
okay.
going to be more. The residuals of maintaining your LLC to keep it in good standing. You're probably going to want to pay your accountant.
Yeah.
So it's probably
state websites also like go to like the Department of Labor, Department of Revenue, excuse me. Those sites have a very well enumerated what the fees are, and they're pretty static. I mean, they may change year to year.
It's not going
to
be much over $1,000,
but
I'd say about $1,000.
You'll have hard numbers to work with.
Thank you.
Thank you.